the Boston players mobbing.
But Michael Jordan is not only the best basketball player, but he's the most exciting basketball player to ever play.
Tatum fires away, pumps it in.
The Big Three NBA Podcast is powered by Prize Picks, the exclusive daily fantasy partner of the CLNS Media Network.
Hello, folks. Welcome to another edition of the Big Three NBA Podcast. This is Sherrod Blakely along with Gary Washburn. We've got no Kwani Luna. She's in a little bit of load management today. All good. But we are going to hold it down in her absence because that's just what we do. We're going to talk about the Celtics' first-round playoff series, which will be against a familiar foe in the Miami Heat. Gary, you mentioned a little while ago that you had came back from practices. What are some of your early impressions of some of the themes that the Celtics are talking about right now, heading into a matchup that we're all very familiar with?
Yeah, I don't think that they're like as much focused on, it's Miami. It's like, we just got to be our best selves. I think that's what they're focused on. They're trying to focus on the big picture, take one game at a time, take advantage of obviously the home court advantage, the fact that Miami is probably a little bit fatigued after playing a couple of games in the last high pressure games in the last couple of days, and just play their game. And they expect obviously Miami's best. Miami's going to throw out some wrinkles. They're game planning, I'm sure, as we speak, to how to contain the Celtics, right? You know, I don't think they're going to stop the Celtics, but how to muck up the game, how to keep the game, you know, 104-96 as opposed to 130-120, because Miami can't score like that. You know, they know their limitations. And, you know, obviously severely shorthanded with no Jimmy Butler, no Terry Rozier. So they're gonna have to find ways to muck up the game. And I think the Celtics are expecting that, but I think they also are focusing on themselves, making the right play, not turning it over, and matching the intensity, not getting caught slipping, not getting caught, you know, easing into the playoffs. Oh, we got this. This is game one. We got plenty of time. Like, punch first. I just think they're trying to focus on what they're going to do to begin this series. And until the game is played, they don't know. You know, they can only talk about it. So that's the thing. We're going to have to wait till Sunday afternoon as to how the Celtics come out, their approach, whether they can hold on to a big lead, whether they can build a big lead, whether they're going to have to make a comeback, whether Miami's going to start the game shooting, you know, 70% in the first quarter. Like, none of us know what's going to happen, but they've got to be prepared for everything.
They do. And we don't, you're right. We don't know what's going to happen, but we know what has happened. These two have met the last 3 years in the playoffs, four of the last 5 years. And, you know, no one's going to forget, you know, last season's matchup in the conference finals where the Celtics were basically a Jason Tatum sprained ankle away from pulling off the greatest comeback in playoff history, going down 0-3, winning three in a row and being poised to potentially put the Heat away in game seven before Tatum suffered that ankle injury early in the game. But as much as it sounds good to talk about, we're just going to focus on us, do our thing. That's going to be the mindset. It's hard to ignore the role that this Heat franchise has played in the Celtics in their growth towards being a top tier team. Miami has been a thorn in their side. Let's be honest and keep it real. And when I look about how they went about this regular season, where I think the Celtics, they were 3-0 against the Heat in the regular season. And most of the games, it got a little dicey, I think, in a couple, and there was a one blowout. But for the most part, the Heat did not have their full allotment of players in this playoff series. They're not going to have their full allotment of players. How much do you think, Gary, you know, them talking about we're just going to focus on now, is just kind of a front for the reality that you can't ignore what has happened in the past. How much do you think the past is playing in their minds as they approach this series?
I'm sure it's in their heads. I don't think it's in the front of their minds like, this is a team that beat us last year. I think this team feels like it's a different team. Remember, as you know, Sherrod, no Marcus Smart, no Grant Williams, replaced by Jrue Holiday and Kristaps Porzingis, two guys who are not used to the rivalry, right? But Jrue Holiday's a guy that lost to the Heat in the first round last year. He was a member of that Heat team. The Bucks team that lost to the Heat in the first round. And I just think that the Celtics at this point are just trying to concentrate, obviously, as we talked about, on themselves, But they also understand that, just because look at the three meetings. The first one was early in the season. Miami kind of pushed the Celtics, and Celtics pulled away in the fourth quarter. The middle game was they hit a bunch of threes. They scored. They just blew the Heat off the out of the water. And the third matchup was without Jimmy Butler, and they kind of struggled and they held on, and I think they won like 110-104. So that was without Butler, right? So Miami's capable of making it a competitive game and competitive series. I don't think they're as capable of winning four times without their main guys. And remember, all the playoff series before, Jimmy Butler has been a part of it. The one in the bubble, the seven gamer, when he missed the three pointer in the last few seconds that could have put Miami ahead, and the Celtics won, and then last year. So how does Miami react with no Jimmy Butler, with Tyler Herro and Bam Adebayo as their lead guys? What role does a guy like Haywood Highsmith play? And then we got a couple of, got a new guy in Jaime Jaquez, right? Rookie, first playoff series. Nikola Jovic, who started last night against the Bulls, like didn't had 5 points. Just, he's a guy, he's a Heat guy who they've developed. And they're taking, so he's starting. What will he play like in his first playoff series? Real exposure to playoff basketball. So the Heat have as many questions, if not more, than the Celtics, but they got also got Eric Spoelstra, who's gonna try to figure out a way to make this series interesting. I don't know if they can win it. The Miami people I talked to down there was like, they might get a game. I don't think the Heat people around here aren't confident, oh, they're going to win this series. But I do think they think like, the Miami could maybe win game three. The team, the people have been watching the team all year. But this is a team that, the Celtics just have had the Celtics number, and Mazzulla got out coached last year by far by Spoelstra. And but if you not haven't followed the Heat all year, no Gabe Vincent, he's with the Lakers. No Max Strus, he is with the
Cleveland.
Cleveland Cavaliers. And let's not forget the presence of Caleb Martin, who I looked at his numbers. He shot 50% from three in a series. He was ridiculous in that series. Just couldn't miss at times. And how do they play him? Do they respect him? And I talked to him last night, and he just said, hey, the reason I did well last year, I was not in the scouting report. I know that. I took that as a disrespect. And now I bet I am now. And I'm like, yeah, I bet you are in the scouting report as well, because he's not only a good defender, not a great defender, a good defender, but he can get streaky. And he hasn't had a great year, I think 10 points a game, 34% from three. But you can expect, and I know you expect it just like I do, somebody from the Heat who we don't expect is going to step up and have a big series. And, will the Celtics get caught off guard by that? I think they have too many weapons, but they've got to lock in and just like get game one. Because if you lose game one, and it's 3 days before game two, 3 days of the media cycle to just say, uh-oh, here we go. The pressure's on game two. So you got to come out on Sunday and punch first and knock them out early and make it a decisive win.
And Gary, as you pointed out, they do have I think a number of wild card factors that they normally have at their disposal, but those wild card factors aren't so wild anymore because of the injuries. You know they're going to play. Like, you don't know how much Highsmith is going to play, but you know he's going to be out there. And so there's no excuse why a guy like that is not on the scouting report. But at the end of the day, this series is going to come down to how your best players fend against their best players. And I wanted us to kind of go through, I think, probably the three most important matchups that are going to be play a role in this series outcome. And I want to start one that you just touched on, Jason Tatum and Caleb Martin. As you pointed out, Gary, Caleb Martin was a guy that was on no one's scouting report. Nobody was talking about him in the build up to this series and he in that series last year in the conference finals. And he was a major, major factor. And if you look at Tatum, Tatum had two games in that series where he scored 14 points, where he scored less than 20. And it was like game three, which was a major game because when you're down 0-2, you got to get game
You
three.
got
And
to get that
Tatum,
game.
yeah. And then obviously, the game seven where Tatum just, with the ankle, he was out there, but he really wasn't. He was just a shell of the player that he normally is. So I'm just curious, when you think about the Tatum Caleb Martin matchup, what are some of the keys to that, how that's going to play out?
Well, I think one, Tatum's got to get off offensively. And I think Martin's a good defender, but he's not a great defender. I think, but they're also going to throw Highsmith at him, you know, maybe Bam Adebayo at times, Jovic. They're going to throw Hawkins. They're going to throw a myriad of defenders at Jason Tatum. So Jason's got to react to that and make the right pass, hit the shot. Like, I think ball movement's going to be important this series, not ISO ball. And I think offensively, you know, you've got to just pay attention to Caleb Martin. You can't leave him open. Remember, there's no Jimmy Butler in the post. So who is their primary scorer? It's probably Tyler Hero. And if you people don't recall, the fans, Tyler Hero did not play in that series. He was hurt. He broke his hand in the Milwaukee series and didn't play, I think, the rest of the season. I think he was supposed to come back for the finals. I don't know if he might have made an appearance in like game five, when they were facing elimination against Denver, but he missed the entire Miami Celtics series. So he is Hunter, he's ready, he's playing. So he's their primary scorer, but he's at times erratic, can be inconsistent, but you can't let him get going. We all remember that 37-point game he had in the bubble as a rookie. So you've got to focus on a bunch of different guys with Miami, and they're not a good scoring team. Like the Chicago game, they were begging the Bulls. The Bulls just had no interest in winning that game. Miami, you know, kind of showboated and coasted in the fourth quarter, but they went through stretches. They had, I think, 34 points in the first quarter, 13 in the second. They go through long stretches where they can't score. If you watch the Philadelphia game, that was with Butler. They, I think, were up what, 51-39, 51-37. And then scored 40 points the rest of the way, 40 something points the rest of the way. Like, they go through scoreless skids. They are not a great working offense. So that means that they can't get into a shootout with the Celtics. And so Caleb Martin, you can't let him just get going. You know, you can't let him get these open threes, you know, where he just gets his, he sets, he fires. That's what happened last year. Some of them were contested, but a lot of those things were open where it was just like, okay, I know he's not going to hit this one. Boom, he hits it. He was 22 for 45 in the series, almost 50, 49% from three. I mean, just an incredible series. So I think for the Celtics, Tatum should dominate this matchup. This is not as much like Caleb Martin. They can't think he's going to do it again, but you got to make sure he doesn't do it again. You got to make sure that he doesn't get comfortable. And that's the whole thing. Don't let him get comfortable. Make him face a strong defense, whether it's Jrue Holiday, Tatum, Jaylen Brown, whoever, and make him face a strong defense to where he knows, okay, it ain't gonna be easy tonight.
This is Sherrod Blakely with the Big 3 NBA Podcast, and I wanted to talk to you about Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app with more than 3 million members. It is the easiest and most exciting way to get in on the action while you watch your favorite sports teams and players compete. You just pick more or less on two or more player stats and watch the winnings roll in. Get in now on the playoff action and win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks as you and the world's best players take the game to a new level during basketball's postseason. You can now win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as four correct picks. Yes, just four picks can multiply your money big time. You can turn that $10 investment into a $1,000 win with basketball, hockey, and other sports entries today on Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. As a longtime fantasy league player myself, Prize Picks is the perfect what's next to satisfy my fantasy league itch. You want in too? Here's what you have to do. First, you gotta go to prizepicks.com/CLNS and use the code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. That's right, prizepicks.com/CLNS. Use the code CLNS for a first deposit match of up to $100. So, that being said, you get a chance to pick more, you can pick less. It's that easy.
Right. And that's really, really important because, you know, the Celtics, again, they're going to have so many different options to consider. The last thing you want to do is to allow anyone to get cooking. on this Miami Heat team, because they don't have a lot of players who have that ability and capacity to do that in this game. One guy you touched on, though, and I want us to spend a little bit more time talking about him and just his role, is Tyler Herro. As you pointed out, Gary, that was a guy that the Celtics, he wasn't on the scouting report because he was out. So they didn't have to worry about the things that he does. Jaylen Brown will be among the folks who will spend some time on Tyler. And I want to just kind of give your take on just that particular matchup where you're talking about arguably, one of Boston's better all-around athletes, certainly, and one of their better defenders going against basically the best perimeter scorer on this Miami Heat team, and frankly, and many would say the only serious threat offensively on the perimeter for them. What's your take on that matchup?
Yeah, I think what the Celtics have to do is make Tyler Herro play some defense, put him in pick and rolls, make him work on both sides of the ball, and not let him get going from three, not let him get open looks contested. He's not a physical guy, but he does like those leaners. He likes those floaters. He likes to dribble drive a little bit, hit the 16-footer off the 1 foot. He's not a ridiculously consistent driver, but he can drive. But you don't want him, Sherrod, to be a scorer and a playmaker. Against the Bulls, I think he had 24 points, 9 rebounds, sorry, 10 rebounds and 9 assists. He had 9 assists. Like, you don't want him to be a scorer and a playmaker. Now he can be inconsistent. I know he was 9 for 27 in that Philadelphia game. He is not this masterly efficient scorer. Like, he's not Curry. He's not out there. He's not going to knock down 10 threes. But if you let him get going, he can really hurt you. And so you have to make him play both sides of the ball, make him go around screens, be physical with him. He's a slight guy. He's not a big guy. He's not a real strong guy. Jaylen should win the strength category in that matchup. But you got to make him work on both sides of the ball, make it difficult for him. He's going to hit some difficult shots. He's going to hit some of those floaters, but you got to make him work. I just think the whole thing with Miami, make those guys work. Do not give them just easy chances, Adebayo, just easy floaters and easy little jumpers. Just make it tough on them, because if you're an elite defensive team, should be effective against Miami because they're not a good offensive team.
Right. And and you're right. And Jaylen, obviously, he's got, he's got some basketball demons he's like to exercise throughout this series. When you think back to how he performed in Game 7, he was in a position that a lot of, guys who are in that number two role want to be in. I can whip my team over the hump by simply carrying them in this one game. And he couldn't get it done. Turnovers, bad shot selection, you name it, it went wrong for Jaylen in that Game 7. What are you expecting to see from him in this series?
A locked in and focused Jaylen. I don't think he's going to try to do too much, but I do think he wants to prove that he's taken a real step forward as a player offensively and defensively. He's more in control. He's not His turnovers were down this year, so Celtics fans hope he doesn't just get flawed, just careless with the ball and taking one on threes on the break and trying to be Superman. Just be yourself, play within yourself. And he was just focused. He worked out a long time today, working on his free throws, working on his jumper, just those that last final workout before the playoffs started, which you like to see from your star players. Just, hey, I'm gonna put in some extra work today. I just want to make sure I'm sharp. And the same with Kristaps Porzingis, just guys working on their games. Derek White also. And I think Jaylen feels like he understands he has a lot to prove. He wants to be considered an elite player, a top 10 player, right? An all NBA staple on the first, second, or third team. And this is the series, and these are the kind of games that you have to prove. Show us. Don't tell us, show us. So I think, he was focused. He wasn't really open with the media. He was a man of few words, which I understand. They're locked in. They're getting ready for this series. And I think he's just got to prove. Just be consistent. Don't do too much, Jaylen. If you got the ball on a break and it's 2-on-4, hold the ball up. Give it to Drew, get it back, or just make the right basketball play. Don't be Superman. Don't do too much. And then, your defense, just be a plus defender. Get in those passing lanes. Be a thorn in their side. Miami's going to be a thorn. They're going to use those Haywood Highsmith guys to go in there and try to give Tatum and Brown trouble. Do the same with them. That's the thing. Fight, punch back. Do exactly what they're doing to you. Be a thorn defensively. Be a plus side team defensively. Don't be afraid of those guys. That's the thing. Just get over that initial, uh-oh, it's Miami. Oh, they're going to do something crazy. They're going to throw a zone at us and get through that. Get the jitters out and play your game, and you should be fine.
Yeah, here's my thing. I think that as this series progresses, and I don't think it'll be a long series, but I do think as long as they're on the floor against the Miami Heat, I think at the end of the day, Jaylen Brown is going to be the best player in this series. And I say that because I think that the Miami Heat have a major problem with his ability to be a major impact player at both ends of the floor. His defense this year has been, frankly, the best defense Jaylen Brown has played all year. And when you throw in the fact that the guys that are going to be on the floor on that perimeter, they're not as deep, and he's not going to have to worry a single minute about dealing with Jimmy Butler at all, Jaylen Brown is going to be a plus defender. Offensively, again, you touched on the Jrue Holiday factor. I think that's going to be huge for Jaylen because that means you're not going to need the ball as much as you're in your hands to play make. You can be, frankly, the guy that finishes plays, as opposed to the guy that has to initiate the offense, try to get the ball around. I think he's going to be a big hockey assist type of guy, making the pass that leads to the bucket, or making the pass that leads to the person who makes the pass that leads to the bucket. But at the end of the day, I think Jaylen Brown is going to be the best player in this series, because I just think that the matchups are so much in his favor, and so much attention, again, as always, is going to be paid to Tatum. And Jaylen, I think, is going to be the beneficiary of that. The other matchup that I want us to talk about is the one matchup that we have no idea how this is going to look in the playoffs because we've never seen it before. And that's Bam Adebayo and Kristaps Porzingis. These two are, frankly, major, major factors in their respective team success. The numbers indicate Porzingis did a pretty good job against Bam this year. Shot, I think, better than 55% from the field when he was matched up against each other. And Bam will spend a lot of time on him. How do you think this particular matchup is going to play out?
Yeah, I think it's interesting because it's physicality against kind of like finesse, right? With Adebayo being that guy who can defend different positions, and he's going to have to be more physical with Porzingis, push him off his spots, make sure he doesn't get comfortable, make sure that he doesn't get the spots that he wants to in terms of, being able to take a jumper. Just it's going to be a physical kind of a chore for Porzingis to play against Adebayo. And I also think the Celtics will kind of do some switching to where Adebayo doesn't ha he'll have to also guard Tatum. He'll have to also guard other guys, so it won't be strictly Adebayo against Porzingis. What I noticed this year is Miami didn't know how to guard Porzingis, and I'm sure they'll figure out a way by Sunday, believe me. Eric Spoelstra is in the lab right now. Okay, but the thing I noticed in the three games he played, they didn't know how to guard him very well. He stood at that zone. He stood at the top of the key, and he can hit a free throw jumper, or he can make the pass. And that was something, the dynamic the Celtics did not have in previous years against that zone. So the zone was not as effective. So let's see how the counter move, the more interesting for fans to watch on in Sunday's game, is how Spoelstra decides to deal with Porzingis. Obviously, Porzingis is not going to play 48 minutes, and now we just found out Luke Kornet is out, likely for the first two games of the series with a calf strain. So now you're talking about Al and then maybe Kida as a third center, right? So Kida, maybe comes into play here and get some extra minutes if they decide to go big. But let's see what Spoelstra does against Porzingis, whether who he puts on him. Does he put a small on him to lean on him a little bit to just wear him out? Does he put Adebayo? But then, he occupies out, he brings Adebayo away from the basket, which means the Miami doesn't have any other rim protectors. So it's going to be interesting to see how they deal with Porzingis because they didn't deal very well. As you read the numbers, they have 55% from the field. They didn't deal with him very well in the three meetings. He had his way with the Heat. That's a dynamic they did not prepared for very well, but I'm sure they've been thinking about it because they didn't. I think the last played on Super Bowl Sunday, so it's been more than 2 months since the last matchup. I'm sure they've been figuring out, trying to figure out ways to neutralize Porzingis, and I don't know how much Adebayo gets involved in that because you don't want him to get foul trouble because they're thin at the big. I think Thomas Robinson is kind of their backup and he's out of the rotation. Patty Mills, remember they signed him during the season. He's out of the rotation now. Who knows? Spoelstra might unleash those guys in this series that he hasn't. You know, I think he's going to throw everything but the kitchen sink. And remember, Sherrod, no Terry Rozier, at least for a week. He's got a kind of a mysterious neck injury. The people I talked to down in Miami say that he kind of woke up with a stiff neck that's now like severely, you know, it's a spasm that it's one of those not a 2 or 3 day thing. It's a week thing, a couple of weeks. So he was on the sideline on the bench, but he doesn't look like he's gonna be he's gonna even I don't you know he'll make the trip to Boston, I'm sure, but I don't know what they're gonna do with him when he'll make an appearance. And that's a key component of their offense, you know, during the season before you know, I think he had a knee injury against the Celtics. You remember, no Josh Richardson either. He's out for the season with shoulder surgery. So Miami is shorthanded, man. The Celtics should be at advantage simply because Miami's shorthanded, but they're also the better team, right? So, but they just got to be ready for anything because we all know Spoelstra is going to throw some, you know, 2-3 zone, 1-2-2. He's going to throw a boxing one. He's going to throw something that's going to, Mazzulla has to adjust to. And the
Yeah.
question is how long it takes to adjust, how long it will keep Miami in the game. And the Celtics also have to avoid those long droughts. Remember, I talked to, you know, coach today, and we talked a little bit about the series, and the kind of consensus was you guys lost that series in the third quarter of game one. You guys were rolling, 13-point lead, I think, at halftime. They look like, okay, so it's a better team than, remember, Miami scored, I think, 46 points in that third quarter, and the series was not the same after that, right? They end up winning game two after coming back. So, you know, you got to watch out for those droughts. Watch out for those little things. But to me, what to look out for is how they guard Porzingis, what they do with him. Is it strictly Adebayo? Is it Haywood Heiss? Is it a series of guys that are just going to lean on him and hopefully for them tire him out a little bit, maybe get him in some foul trouble, go at him defensively, make, you know, like they're going to have to figure out a way to get him off the floor.
Yeah, and conversely, Joe has to figure out how to utilize Porzingis effectively without it being a major disruption to the overall flow of what they want to do offensively. And that brings me to the next thing I wanted to talk to you about is just, you know, that coaching matchup where, you know, you often hear coaches say during a regular season you're playing checkers, but the playoffs it's about playing chess. Very different mindset to be successful in the postseason versus the regular season. And again, you're talking about two coaches who Joe Mazzulla doesn't have nearly as much runway in terms of what he's done throughout the course of his career, but he's been off to a pretty damn impressive start. You start looking at the coaches that have come through the Celtics pipeline, and Joe Mazzulla is at the top of the list as far as wins this quick, this early in their careers. And then on the other side, you've got a guy in Spoelstra who has managed some of the greatest talent and, to be candid, some of the biggest egos and has won with that, or in some would say, in spite of that. So, how do you see the Joe Mazzulla Eric Spoelstra matchup playing out? And again, this is coming off of you know a year ago where it was a decisive Spoelstra knockout of Mazzulla. How do you think things will be different, if at all, this year?
I think Mazzulla's got to make it obviously close the gap on that. You know, you might get out coached in certain stretches by Eric Spoelstra. He's a great coach, but you have to let your talent play. You've got to make the right moves, and you can't be afraid to take some chances. But you also have to respect their roster, respect them as a team, and not think that, and not be afraid of just playing your game and imposing your will. And I think Mazzulla seems to be prepared for that. And you know, who knows? He might have had a picture of Spoelstra on his wall all season at home, throwing darts at it, like, hey, I'm waiting for my rematch. I'm waiting, you know, he's a guy who does a jiu-jitsu and he's a competitive guy. He might have been waiting for he might be relishing this matchup. Who knows? But he has to close the gap. He cannot allow a less talented team to hang in this series because I think last year, it was like Miami was coming off all that momentum from winning the first two series. Remember, they beat Milwaukee, then they beat the Knicks. So they come into that series like, we got this. We done won two series as the home as the underdog and without home court advantage. So by the time they got to Boston, they're rolling. That's the difference. This is the first round. This is not the Eastern Conference Finals. This team is not, it's lost a play-in game and a won a play-in game. That's it. Miami's not coming in filled with momentum and confidence, like, oh, we got this. Last year they did. This year, it's up to Mazzulla to get his guys motivated enough to take this from Miami. And it's a mental thing too. And you can't, and you got to respect Eric Spoelstra, one of the top two to three coaches in the league. Some people say the best. Yes, he's right up there amongst the best coaches in the NBA. But you can't just say, oh, you're just going to beat us. Like, you've got to play chess along with Spoelstra. You might lose in 50 moves, but it's better than losing in 15 moves. It's better getting checkmated because you don't know, take the chances. You don't make the moves. You haven't thought that far ahead where he's thinking that far ahead. So that's why you got Sam Cassell. That's why you got Charles Lee. That's why you got Jeff Van Gundy to prepare you for this challenge. Because it's a challenge just as much as it is for the Celtics. It's a challenge for Joe Mazzulla. It's a challenge for him to show that he's one of the top-notch coaches in the NBA, and he deserves Coach of the Year votes, leading the team to 64 wins and not losing more than two in a row all year. He's done a lot of great things as coach this year. So it's time to prove it. Don't tell us, show us. Like, come up with a game plan that shuts them down. Come up with a game plan that throw a couple of wrinkles at them. Remember, they were trying out zones in the summer league. They were doing full court press at times. They were like, the Celtics were throwing things at teams as teams were throwing at them. It's time to do that with Miami to catch them off guard too. You got to play your game too. Now, I'm not talking about trying crazy stuff. It's stuff that you're not good at, you're not natural at, things that you don't do to try to, to get them off kilter. But you got to do things that you know you can do, and you can't be so predictable. I thought last year with the 3-point shot, with guys, they were just predictable. Marcus Smart was kind of on his own, doing some things. Grant Williams, they didn't have the personnel that they had this year. They don't. Didn't last year, unfortunately. Marcus Smart, love him, just was kind of erratic during that series. Jason Tatum had his moments. And we haven't even talked about Derek White and the improvement of Derek White and how he can change this series, because the Derek White from last year was still a very good player and he hit that winning shot, but this year he's an even better player. So the Celtics have to look at themselves and go, okay, in all honesty, there's no reason that a team that starts Nikola Jovic and not Jokic,
The
and
other one,
yeah, the other one, his little brother, and Hami Hakez, I vote him all rookie team, great. But a guy who's 23 years old, and like, there's no reason that starting lineup should be able to hang with you for 48 minutes. Maybe 40, maybe 38, but not 48 minutes. And you got to punch first, because you see these other playoff games, teams are getting off to good starts. We saw Cleveland take care of business. Minnesota's taking care of business against Phoenix. We'll see the last two games tonight. It's time, I mean, the higher seeds are winning, right? This isn't upset city so far. So the Celtics can't be the victims. They can't think, oh, they're going to beat us. They're going to beat us. This is, they're not, this isn't Jaws. This isn't Freddy Krueger. This ain't Mike Myers. Ain't Friday the 13th. They have to know that they're a boogeyman too.
Okay. I was waiting for the Chucky reference or
Or Chucky.
Candyman. I was waiting for that one. Okay.
Or Wayne, or I'm gonna say Wayne Brady and Chappelle.
Oh, damn.
Oh, bleep,
I hate
it's
you.
Wayne
I
Brady.
hate you.
You gotta be Wayne Brady in this damn series. You gotta be Wayne
Man.
Brady.
Kids need to Google that one to get that one. That's some rarefied comedy.
Bleep, oh bleep, it's Wayne Brady.
Man, oh man. And on that note, this is the NBA Big Three podcast. This is Sherrod Blakely with Gary Washburn. Don't forget to, before we go out of here, a shout out to PrizePicks.com, the exclusive daily fantasy partner of CLNS Media Network. And folks, if you love this, which we know you do, download this latest episode and check out the past episodes of the Big Three NBA podcast from your favorite podcasting app. For Gary Washburn, I'm Sherrod Blakely. And Kwani, I hope you are enjoying your day of rest. get back on the grind next week when we get some games going. And for the Big 3 NBA Podcast, it's Rob Blakely. We're out.